Okay, everyone, last but of course not least, we have Actinium, represented by SVP David Gould. They have proprietary ADC technology with clinical assets in various oncology indications. Dave.
Good afternoon or evening, everyone. Thank you for the diehard sticking around. I'm covering for our Executive Chairman, Sandesh Seth. My name is David Gould, SVP of Finance and Corporate Development. We're Actinium Pharmaceuticals. Also, if there's any follow-up questions after this talk, please email ATNM, that's our ticker, @irthcommunications.com. I'll be making forward-looking statements. We are a public biotechnology company in the business of radiopharmaceuticals and hematology, initially for AML, acute myeloid leukemia, with designs on other hematologic indications as well. Then ultimately, we believe our platform technology is also applicable for solid tumors. But for the moment, we're AML-focused. Our ticker is ATNM. We're traded on the NYSE market. You can see our stats here on this slide. We have a cash runway of 1 to 2 years, assuming a burn of $1 million to $2 million a month. So our main two products or drug candidates that I'll speak about today are Iomab-B and Actimab-A. What they share in common is they're both radiolabeled antibodies. So the antibodies attack targets, of course, and they're directed to those targets. And they carry payloads, which in our case are radioisotopes, radioactive isotopes. In the case of Iomab-B, it's iodine-131. In the case of Actimab-A, it's actinium-225, actinium being our namesake. Both are being developed for elderly AML patients. This is a massive unmet medical need. These patients are gravely ill with a very limited life expectancy. In the case of Iomab-B, it's being developed for as part of a myeloablative regimen to bring those patients to bone marrow transplant. And that's important because BMT transplant is the only curative option that those patients have. And because these patients are older and frail, most of them are not offered transplant. They will be offered transplant, assuming Iomab-B is approved. Actimab-A is based on our underlying alpha technology. We have a lot of expertise linking alpha particles to antibodies, and that's being developed for newly diagnosed AML patients. And it's referred to sometimes as the alpha particle immunotherapy platform. We have a recent hire that I'll highlight. Felix Garzon joins us from Eisai, a very experienced pharma person who will be heading up our clinical trial operations. Here's the senior management team in a nutshell. I'll also highlight here, just in the interest of time, Roland Turk, who works with us very closely. He helped launch Xofigo at Bayer, which is relevant, I think, because it's the first example of commercial validation of alpha particle emission. That's a radium-based product for prostate cancer, very successful. And the original developer of that product, Algeta, was purchased by Bayer for about $3 billion. We have very esteemed, pedigreed KOL, key opinion leaders, as our advisors. Each of these two boards listed here focus on each of our two main drug candidates. First one, Actimab-A, chaired by Dr. Jurcik up at Columbia. You'll recognize a number of these names. And our second one here, the SAB, focused on Iomab-B for bone marrow transplant. You know, in this case, we have some of the top transplanters in the country, if not the world. Dr. Richard Champlin, for example, at MD Anderson, has the busiest, the most high-volume transplant service anywhere, bar none. When we get in, and I'll speak about the clinical trial coming in a minute, virtually all of these institutions will be participating in our upcoming trials. Cartoon here, I'll just highlight the difference between alpha and beta emission. So Iomab-B, again, soon to enter phase 3. That's an antibody targeting CD45 found throughout the hematopoietic stem cell system. The beta emitter is iodine-131, well-known, well-regarded, has been used for 60 years or so in the treatment of papillary thyroid carcinoma. So beta emitter, it has a relatively long range, and it is appropriate for bone marrow ablation. Our alpha particle is actinium-225. That's a second-generation program. Originally, we were using bismuth. That has a much shorter path length, measured in microns, 2 to 4 cell diameter path length, but an extraordinarily high linear energy transfer. So it's a fabulously potent leukemia cell killing machine, but it doesn't go particularly far. So it kills leukemia cells and then dissipates. Not very much in the way of collateral damage. here's our pipeline neatly summarized. I'll highlight IMAB-B that I spoke about, soon to enter phase 3, and also Actimab-A at the latter portion of a phase 1 trial, soon to enter phase 2. It's a 1/2 trial, actually. And Bismab there that you see in the light blue was the earlier generation Actimab-A. Here's how IMAB-B and Actimab-A fall into the overall treatment of these patients. So IMAB-B is positioned as an integral part of a myoablative regimen to essentially nuke these patients' bone marrow to allow them to have transplant. And that's important because ordinarily the only thing that could prepare them for transplant would be a conditioning regimen with high-dose chemotherapy. And most elderly refractory AML patients cannot tolerate that. That's where IMAB-B comes in, certainly an appealing alternative to high-dose chemo. Actimab-A, earlier in the treatment regimen for newly diagnosed. Now, AML is a disease of the elderly. The median age of diagnosis is around 67 or 68. So when we speak about patients 55 and up, we're speaking about most of the patients. Summarizing IMAB-B, we licensed this from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, sometimes known as the Hutch or Fred Hutch. Real top institution, which had used IMAB-B successfully in close to 300 patients over a number of years across many different hematological malignancies, not just AML, but a number of others as well. We're focusing on AML because we think it's the fastest path to market. We have every expectation if we're successful in AML, it'll be successful in other hematologic cancers, may even be used off-label in the context of transplant anyway. Transplant works. It's curative. It's the only option, the only curative option for AML, refractory AML patients. But again, the problem is most patients aren't being offered transplant today, and that's where IMAB-B comes in. It's a large database which we can mine out of the Hutch. And we're preparing for a phase 3 trial, as some of you know, which should begin soon. Here, this depicts the length of therapy. I think this is relevant for a few reasons, but perhaps in a rapidly advancing, rapidly fatal disease like refractory AML, days and weeks really matter. So everything else being equal, the idea that you could get to transplant much faster certainly should translate into real, you know, clinical differentiation here. You know, not to mention the more acceptable side effect profile versus chemo. Potentially cheaper as well. Well, we have our work cut out for us pharmacoeconomically, but we believe we can save the system money as well against a backdrop of a very expensive procedure, BMT. These are the highlights from the early day or phase 1/2 data out of the Hutch. For those interested in a great deal more technical detail, there's a blood article, primary author John Pagel, the chairman of our SAB, so I'd refer you to the blood article. But in this case, in the AML patients, we see a 30% one-year survival, close to 20% two-year survival. This is apples to oranges because it's comparing to a comparable population of AML patients at MD Anderson. So these patients are not expected to make it 2 years. If this data holds up, we give them a 1-in-5 chance of making it 2 years, and that's very meaningful. The overall framework of the trial, you know, we've discussed, for those who are really interested in this, we have some expert panels up on our website of some of these key opinion leaders talking about this trial and why this is the right design for this trial. And we also have buy-in from the FDA on this overall design. We expect it to be approximately 150 patients, 75 per arm, in a multi-center controlled trial and, for patients 55 and up with refractory or relapsing AML. The control arm, importantly, is physician's choice of best available chemotherapy. That's important because it makes this a real-world study. We're not dictating to the doctors what chemo that they have to use out of a short menu. Whatever they want to use is fine. So it's what they would be doing anyway. Now, unfortunately, because these are older patients, many of whom are frail, most of them are not even offered high-dose chemo in the first place and are simply offered palliative care and have a life expectancy of perhaps only 2 or 3 months. Now, it's, you know, we expect a small number of control arm patients will have a complete response and move on to transplant, but probably not all that many. Primary endpoint here is 6-month durable CR. So 180 days a duration for CR. It is, from a statistical point of view, it's very much overpowered, and we believe we'll be able to demonstrate, we hope to be able to demonstrate a doubling of the CR rate, and if the the Hutch data holds up, we should be able to do that. The crossover, incidentally, is only offered for ethical reasons. Here's some market data that may be of interest. It's very interesting to us that the bone marrow transplant market is so highly concentrated. There's only about 150 centers in the U.S. that even do adult BMT. Top 10, you're close to a third. Top 20 centers account for over half the volume. And I'm happy to say that we have a strong relationship with the majority of those top 20 centers, and many of them will be in our upcoming trial. And this could be a situation where if this drug is approved, the market is seeded on day one because it is so highly concentrated. This is an inpatient drug candidate, IOMAD-B, to be used in bone marrow transplant centers. And here we see market potential of some other indications as well. Let me move on, in the interest of time, please, to our alpha-based program being developed for newly diagnosed AML. This is, as I mentioned, a second-generation product. The bismuth-based product, Bismab, worked and was relatively safe. However, it had a very, very short half-life, which gave it difficult handling characteristics, and it had high cost of goods. So in due course, and this grew out of Memorial Sloan Kettering technology, and Dr. David Scheinberg, who is on our clinical advisory board, is one of the scientific co-founders of this platform and a very well-respected authority. A lot of our expertise and our intellectual property surrounds our ability to link alpha emitters to antibodies. And so we're very good at that. We're able to tightly and stably link in actinium-225 to an antibody some of you may know as lentuzumab, worked on by other companies in the past. It has a very well-validated and well-understood target called CD33. However, the evidence is that the antibody by itself, as a naked antibody, is not particularly potent. But we arm it with actinium-225, which is this very potent leukemia cell killer that I mentioned before. It is currently in a fourth human clinical trial, if you're including Bismab. So the second Actimab trial, but the fourth alpha technology trial overall for us. It is close to the end of the phase one portion of the phase 1/2 trial. It's in the fourth cohort, so we believe we have already or are close to establishing MTD, maximum tolerated dose, and that's the dose with which phase two would proceed in the fairly near future. And here's a selection of the top institutions that are in our trial. The data that you see here on the slide is essentially what we have presented at ASH 2014, December of last year. We habitually update Actimab data at major medical conferences with a few additional patients each time, and we expect these trends to hold. We do see a dose response. We do see, now this is still early days, of course, because we're only talking phase one, we're not talking massive numbers of patients, but we do see a trend that this is effective, particularly in secondary AML patients, and that's interesting because that's a meaningful market, and many folks who get MDS, myelodysplastic syndrome, move on to develop secondary AML. Still newly diagnosed, but it's secondary AML. Now on this slide, we see the market potential of the pipeline. The BMT market I spoke about, in an ideal world, we would go after that market ourselves in the U.S. Because it's so concentrated, we think we could do it with a sales force of approximately 5 individuals, supported by maybe 10 other MSLs and staff, although we could certainly use help to partner it outside the U.S. And as you might imagine, try to speak with and get the attention of the relevant companies in the field. Actimab-A, also we think because it's in a fourth trial, because we have strong data so far, because CD33 is a very well-understood target, we think it has a good chance of being successfully developed and eventually commercialized for AML. And then there's some other indications here where we've done some preclinical work in the past. Here are some near-term value drivers. It has taken us longer than originally anticipated to begin our phase three for IMAB-B. So for some investors that have been following the story for a while, it would be understandable if there's a degree of impatience. I would say that a significant portion of the delay had been, and we mentioned this in a shareholder letter a few weeks back, manufacturing related. And the good news is that we've overcome our manufacturing delays. That's now fixed. We're now able to make the BC8 antibody in the appropriate scale up, so at the right quantity and the right with the right quality as well, because whatever we use in our phase 3 trial has to be at the same standard that would be used commercially. So we're getting closer and closer, and then the next milestone that we need to hit, which we believe we'll hit soon, is IND approval from FDA. Once we get that, we're out of the gate, because the interest from the centers that would be participating in this trial is really, really apparent. Many of the top bone marrow transplant doctors around the U.S. from the highest volume centers are very keen in being in our trial, and in no small part because they have nothing else to offer these patients. A refractory AML patient who's 60 or 70 years old comes along, there's nothing to offer these folks. All of a sudden, there's an IOMAB-B trial. It should make enrollment fairly straightforward. We expect to be able to enroll that trial in about a one-year time frame. You know, as I've been alluding to, you know, the highest volume centers account for a significant portion of the market. So this is a circumstance where, if approved, the market will already be seeded for IOMAB-B. Actimab-A will continue to have data coming out from time to time, and in due course begin the phase 2 at the MTD. We also may have other work to speak about, another indication or indications. So hold that thought for the future. And then there's always the possibility of a significant partnership to announce. You know, these things are impossible to handicap, so it's best not to, you know, try to predict it too much, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility, and we're making sure that the right potential partners know about what we're doing. There's also validation out there. I mentioned Bayer before. You know, we happen to know they're working on thorium as an alpha emitter. They're not as far along as we are, but we will still say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And here's a summary. IOMAB-B, as part of an ablative regimen for bone marrow transplant and refractory AML patients. The slide should be updated in terms of timing, but it's our intention to begin the trial by year-end, and if not by year-end, then shortly thereafter. The interest of the centers is there. Once we get our IND, we're able to contract with the sites and get this thing moving. Actimab-A, as I mentioned, is at the last portion of phase 1, soon to enter phase 2. We think both of these drug candidates address serious unmet medical need. We're not naive about the challenges before us. We know AML is a difficult area, but the feedback we get from physicians, from patients, and from regulatory authorities is all quite positive and encouraging. There's a lot of people that want to see these drugs make it. I'll remind everyone that our alpha technology is part of a platform technology. By no means is this limited to AML or even hematology. This is absolutely applicable to other antibodies, including those against solid tumor targets. We're a small company. We're lean and mean, so to speak. We recently bought on Dr. Felix Garzon, as I mentioned, and we may have more to announce in the future in terms of staffing up as our trials advance and the requisite staffing changes become necessary. We think that we have a lot of expertise around targeted radio immunotherapy, and these drugs will be able to meet serious unmet medical needs. Here's some communication information. I'm happy to take questions now to the extent of my ability. Thank you all very much. This one or before that? Okay, so this in the bottom left here is from an old BISMAB trial. So we see dose response. We see, you know, thank you. We believe so as well. And we think that Actimab-A will meet or exceed the performance of BISMAB-A. Again, just BISMAB had a 46-minute half-life, so it literally had to be made at the bedside. That's not good for national distribution. Actinium has about a 10-day half-life. So that's doable on any continent. We also have the ability to make, so we source actinium, incidentally, from Oak Ridge National Labs from the U.S. Department of Energy, and we have an agreement which works very well in terms of supply. But once any alpha technology makes it to market, it becomes economical for us to do this in a cyclotron. And we demonstrated a number of years back at the Technical University of Munich that we have the ability to make this in a cyclotron, and it makes economic sense above a certain volume. Thank you all.
I have a two-part question.
Sure.
When approximately do you plan to file the IND, and how far after that do you expect to be trial, and how long will it take?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, we haven't been too specific about our projections, so, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn. Assuming all goes as planned, it's reasonable to expect that we would get our IND in the next, let's say the next few months, and we would be able to begin the trial very swiftly thereafter. Yet once the IND is awarded, it's just a matter of contracting with the business offices and the different sites and getting through the institutional review boards, IRBs. Now, some IRBs take longer than others, so if you have a really slow-moving IRB, that could make any given center take a few months to come online. But we'll begin with the highest volume centers, centers like, for example, MD Anderson, Memorial Sloan Kettering, and the Hutch. It's not realistic to enroll every center in a trial at day one. Life doesn't work like that. But, start with the biggest and work our way down.
And you expect the trial line to be?
Yeah, the trial, we think we could, assuming our modeling is correct, and our modeling is extraordinarily conservative because we've deeply discounted the enrollment projections that centers have given us, we think we could enroll this trial in a year. How many centers remains to be seen. It could be as many as 30. It'll probably end up being less than that. I don't know that we necessarily need to go to 30. So a year to enroll, and then year two to get the data we need to submit for approval.
So all in all, maybe 2.5 years.
That's exactly right. That's our projection.
Thank you. I'm with the IR
from the audience. Okay. Well, thank you all very much for listening.